Hello, and welcome to Syngenta Growing Golf, the podcast about tomorrow's golf industry today. My name is Gary Firkins, and I'm your host. Today, I'm speaking to Jim Beatty, organiser of the African American Golf Expo. African Americans represent 5% of US golfers. Jim believes there is an opportunity to double the number of players and significantly increase the value of the African American golf market, currently worth $4 billion. We're interested in your thoughts and feedback, so please do join the conversation at syngentagolf.com or via Twitter and LinkedIn. Enjoy the show. Jim Beatty, welcome to Syngenta Growing Golf. It's great to have you.
It's my pleasure, and thank you for having me.
Jim, tell us about your journey into golf. Tell us a little about where you grew up and what was your first experience of golf?
Absolutely. I'm a native Chicagoan, born and raised on the west side of Chicago. And growing up, never thought about golf. It was not the most interesting sport for me. I was involved in basketball, baseball, and actually went to college on a track scholarship. And so golf was just not a part of my life. I saw it on TV and what have you. I remember Julius Burroughs and some others and what have you. It wasn't until after I was hired into AT&T, I worked for AT&T for a number of years, that I would go on various corporate outings, and golf was always a part of it. And so it struck me that I need to be a bit more conversant with this game. Not everybody is playing basketball or everybody's running track. I need to understand this game a little bit more. So I embarked upon it in my own particular way and became a bit conversant with it. But really the turning point for me was meeting a gentleman by the name of Steve Hogan in Omaha, Nebraska, which is, of course, where I live. Steve Hogan's African-American, and at that time was the only African-American golf professional, certified golf professional in the state. Well, he was managing a municipal nine-hole three-par course, and he would often talk to me, and I knew him even before that, but he would often say, come on down, Jim, and hit a few balls and see if you like it. And in that process, ultimately, I just gave in and said, okay, I'll go down. How hard can this be? What could go wrong? One day I went down, and he gave me a 9-iron and said, you know, just go down there and hit a few. And after I whiffed a few, I said, oh, this is not right. I can't do this. I cannot allow this to happen. And so that's when the bug started.
You're naturally competitive then?
Oh, yes. I've been competitive my whole life. I've been in athletics my whole life. And so not being able to succeed in something rather quickly was a bit irritating, frustrating, and awfully embarrassing as well, too, that, oh, no. I have to do some more work here. And so ultimately, I got more conversant and familiar with the game. He asked me to become part of his organization, Hogan's Junior Golf Heroes, to help promote the game to kids in the neighborhood that were, you know, riding their bikes through the course and things like that. And he offered an outlet for them, and he needed some assistance from his board and his organization to help, you know, raise money to support the kids and their endeavors. I got involved in that. And then from that, one thing led to another. I was invited to join the Nike board of directors for the local tournament, when it was the Nike tournament, now the Korn Ferry Tour. And one thing just led to another. I started getting invited to other organizations and ultimately national, with the National Golf Foundation, to sit on a task force dealing with diversity and what have you. So one thing just progressed to the other. But I would have to say, Mr. Steve Hogan was the reason that I really got started on this particular trajectory.
And at the same time, you had a career alongside this in terms of business. What was happening there? What were you doing?
Absolutely. So for many years, I worked for AT&T in the marketing department, responsible for developing Omaha into what we term as the toll-free center of the country. If you ever dialed an 800 number, toll-free number, back then, which would be in the early 70s and what have you, Omaha was the place where many of those calls came. I left AT&T in 1982 to start my company, NCS International, which I still have, which was a corporate site selection and economic development firm. And I'm still involved in that, where we help companies that are expanding, regardless of the type of company. We help them find their locations. We do the due diligence, the financial projections, tax comparisons, all of those factors, and help them make a final decision. We make recommendations. They make the final decision as to where they want to put their facility. But we do all of that work for them as well, too.
So you've got these two sides.
Yes.
You've got your Gulf side.
Yes.
You've got your business side.
Yes.
And these two paths have converged.
Yes.
And African-American Gulf Expo.
Yes, sir.
This is something you founded.
Yeah.
Tell us about.
Absolutely. It struck me one day. Actually, it was one morning about probably 3:30. I tend to do my best thinking at those kind of hours, that there is actually a merger between economic development and the golf industry. So most people see the golf industry in terms of what they see on television, the Tiger Woods and everybody else, right? And that's fine, and that's great. But once you get behind that and you understand all of what's going on in this, as of 2016, $84 billion industry, there is the golf course superintendents, of course, for sure. There are the agronomists, there are the weathermen, there are the IT professionals, the cameras. It just goes on and on and on. And so it struck me that I believe, demonstrate the convergence and merger of economic development and golf, not by focusing necessarily on competitive golf, but by focusing on all of those activities involved in the golf industry and bringing attention to those things. And to the extent that we can have African-Americans involved in some of those activities, that's what I set out to do in part through the expo. The mission is the same. Grow the game, make golf look like America, pardon me, look like the world, for sure, and to get people engaged at different levels in this process. And that's what started it.
So where was where was the first expo?
Yeah.
And what happened?
Yeah, the first expo was held in 2021 in Atlanta, actually in Marietta, right outside of Atlanta proper. And we had about 750 people show up over the 4.5-day event. And that's including people that were there for the clinic, the breakout sessions, the scramble, the golf tournament, everything. As we totaled it, about 750, and we were just pleasantly surprised and very energized by that, oh my goodness, we have something, and I'm glad we do, because that's what we wanted to have happen. The support from the industry was just outstanding in terms of sponsorships. We had exhibitors as well, too. It was just a tremendous welcome from all aspects of the industry. That's when we thought we've got something that we need to nurture and grow.
What's the bigger objective here? You know, the golf industry is a big industry, but this is a community that can play an important part in the golf industry.
It is a big industry, big marketplace, and there's room for everyone in it, for sure. When we talk about African Americans and other groups that perhaps have not been totally represented, I have found the golf industry to be one very open and welcoming to saying, come on in, there's room and we want to have you. We want to find places, locations, careers, jobs, whatever the case might be, for everyone to get involved. This is a great industry. This is a great business. Come on in. We have seen within the past several years companies starting or expanding their diversity initiatives, men and women of color, all types of public gender initiatives and what have you. I've been very pleased and very proud that the golf industry has shown itself to be that open and welcoming. And so we're simply trying to be a part of that process to bring people into the industry. And again, bottom line, help the industry grow.
And looking at your website, you quote a statistic there that the African-American golf industry is worth $4 billion as part of, and there's a bigger industry of $84 billion. Where can you take this, do you think? Where can you grow this part of the market, your share of the market?
Sure. My degree is in mathematics, so I tend to migrate toward having statistics in everything you do. If you can't measure it, then you have to wonder, well, why are you doing it if you can't measure it? Golf itself is based on measurements, and you know better than anyone, every aspect of golf is measured, right? You know, drives, length, birdies, bogeys, all of that. So why not measure the industry? The best measurement we have at this point, according to the National Golf Foundation, is that golf, African-Americans represent about 5% of the 25 million golfers out there, 5%. African-Americans represent about 14% of the population in the U.S. So we think we can easily double, well, on one of our targets should be, it may not be easily, but is to double, if not triple, the level of involvement of African-Americans in the golf industry some way, somehow. Again, looking at everything, not just competitive golf, but golf, again, golf course superintendents, working for the PGA of America, working for the PGA Tour, working for the USGA, working for the LPGA, and all the other alphabets that are part of the golf industry. We see that as a very reasonable component of growth.
And there are opportunities, presumably. This is about stimulating thought around creating internships on the one hand, and then at board level, at the other end of the scale, getting people involved, diversity at all levels of the game.
It's the full spectrum. You're absolutely right. From entry level all the way through the board and C-level. We just, 2 weeks ago at the PGA show, had several HBCU, that's historically black colleges and universities. We had several presidents of those institutions there to introduce them to the world of golf and to explain to them and show them how their students at their respective institutions can become a part of this. We are actually working on initiatives with the HBCUs and the White House in this initiative. So it simply can take us wherever we want to be from an imaginative standpoint. It can take us to new levels and new heights, without a doubt.
The African American Golf Expo is also supporting new businesses and younger businesses to help get them into the industry. You mentioned the PGA show there.
Yes.
You were taking those businesses to the PGA show.
Yeah, figuratively, yes. We have been working with the Reed Exhibitions, the folks that actually put on the PGA show. For the past 2 years, we've had what's called the Share Your Story contest, where each business that exhibits at the African American Golf Expo is invited to submit a 3-minute video about the challenges and obstacles that they have had, how they've dealt with it, talk a little bit about their company. And from that, three companies are selected, and they each receive varying degrees of incentives to attend the PGA show. Otherwise, I'm very confident in saying they probably would not attend the PGA show. It is a show that requires, obviously, some fun expenditure. Reed Exhibitions, PGA of America, have been extremely supportive in helping us to get three companies there. So now, over the past 2 years, of course, six companies. But what's more important, or just as important, is that those three companies certainly won the contest, but there are other companies that have said, you know what, we're going to make that investment in the PGA show. We're going to come totally on our own dime. And this year we had, in addition to the three that were there, we had, I believe, three others that attended on their own dime. And I love seeing the companies make those investments. It's telling me that they're serious, and it also tells me that they see the PGA show, as everyone knows, as the greatest show on earth or on dirt, however you want to say it. It's an outstanding show, and that's the place to be. This industry is a place to be.
You've also won influential backing. Golf Digest has got behind the African-American Golf Expo, and its editor, Jerry Tardy, has personally endorsed, what you're doing. How important is that to you?
That was an absolute milestone. I had not met Mr. Tardy before I started the expo, and I was able to contact him to simply talk about the expo and what we wanted to do. I was aware of his, I'll have to say, courageousness in taking on causes in the golf industry. And you have to be courageous. I think you have to be somewhat of an independent thinker to do that and say, this is my kind of guy. I want to talk with him and just tell him what we're doing. So I did have a conversation with him. He was gracious enough to give me some time, and we talked. And from that, it led to Golf Digest, part of the Discovery Corporation, becoming our presenting sponsor, and their support has been extremely valuable. I think it also said to the golf industry that, my goodness, if the Golf Digest can support this and Discovery, let me find ways in which my particular company can assist. So his involvement, his input, really has been a bedrock and a foundation for us going forward.
And you've seen that making a difference?
We have multiple sponsors. Again, with all of the alphabets in golf that you would know, that our viewers would know, have their sponsors. We continue to get new sponsors as well. And that's what it takes to put it on. I mean, I can't put this on and fund this totally myself. I'm willing to do as much as I possibly can, but having support of companies on any and all level that they're comfortable with is very, very important. So I definitely have seen the impact of that.
We've just talked about media there. Let's also talk about African-American Golfers Digest.
Yes, sir.
The magazine and website that you're executive editor of.
Executive editor.
Tell me the story behind that publication, that media, because it's actually been around a while, but just give us a little overview.
Yeah, it's almost 20 years now that Burt Cook, who's the founder and publisher of that, in fact, I have a copy here of that, thank you, copy of the magazine, has been around about 20 years, and it covers the activities, accomplishments of African-Americans in the industry. It is wide open for anyone who wants to submit. This is a double issue, so she's very creative in trying to save money. It started out as a monthly publication, internet growth being what it is. It's now online, but we still put out print copies. Roughly 20,000 subscribers, 60,000 readership, 60,000 to 80,000, on any one month for the magazine. Very, very proud of what DeBert Cook has done. She saw a void when she started it, that there was nothing that really catered to the African-American and in terms of golf. And that's why she decided to do this. Again, this has been well-received, and this is the major publication for African-Americans in the golf industry for certain, to cover events, people, and activities that are of vast importance to our culture and to what we're doing.
And how important is it, do you think, in terms of, well, there's the old phrase, seeing is believing.
Yeah.
How important is that?
Yeah, well, you said it. Seeing is believing. Talk is cheap, but actions speaks louder than words, for sure. And so to see people involved in the golf industry, to see people involved in running golf clubs and organizations, to see people that are securing internships and jobs and careers, and we have indeed seen that over the past several years, that speaks volumes, and that really serves as a motivator for folks like me and others to continue our quest. We don't feel we're alone. The golf industry, the commission, from the commissioners on down, have been very open and very welcoming in having us, as Sandy Cross from the PGA of America would put, join the party. We're part of the party now, and we simply want to continue the merriment.
I was reading the letters page, and I actually found it quite moving, actually, to see what it meant to people. There was one person who wrote, African-American Golfers Digest are helping to change the culture of the United States with grace and dignity. I wonder how that makes you feel.
It makes me feel very good, especially the grace and dignity part. Certainly, you can always stand outside of an establishment and throw stones and rocks at it, right? Or you can take another approach, the higher level, if you will, and become participative, talk with and for the industry. And that's what we've tried to do, not attack it by any means, but to simply say, look, there are some dimensions that perhaps many folks are not aware of, and we're simply trying to bring those things to light. Again, the accomplishments from the junior level to the senior level, folks all over the country that are a part of the love affair with golf, as we all are.
Syngenta has just conducted a large piece of social media research, 16.1 million social media posts mentioning golf have been analyzed through artificial intelligence. But what it shows is kind of quite a clear picture across all types of people, saying that in terms of golf, they are either insiders or outsiders. And, you know, whether we're young, old, male, female, A lot of people feel on the outside of golf. How does the African-American community feel, do you think, about golf?
I think it would mirror what the general population would feel. Certainly, there are some other factors. We all are aware that there was a Caucasian-only clause until 1961, and that changed. That was the first indicator that, okay, golf is opening itself. However, we set that aside for just a second to say golf itself can be intimidating. I hear more often than not that the most intimidating term for most new golfers is standing on the first tee with an audience, whether it's 2 or 20 or 200. That's intimidating. So the more golf can become less intimidating, the better. It's just that simple. So we have to make friends with the sport. The sport's got to, and the industry's got to make friends with us as well, too. So we need to eliminate those barriers. Many of them are artificial. They're mental. So one simple answer, as an example, don't tee off. Go out 200 yards and start playing your second shot. Don't even tee off. Yeah. So there's way. Now, that won't work for a competitive play. But for sure, we're talking about recreational golfers. All we want people to do is to get out, play golf, enjoy themselves, and we don't have to intimidate them. The golf shot will intimidate you. That's enough. You don't need anything else other than that. And so we can find ways. We can greet people, pros, if you listen to this, pros, start greeting your new golfer in the parking lot. You'd be surprised. Meet them at their car in your golf park. Pick up their clubs, bring them on out. The more you make them feel familiar and less threatened, the longer term they're going to have with this industry.
And I think exactly what you've said is reflected in the results of the social media listening project. With African American Golf Expo, with the magazine, what is the journey you're on, and where are you hoping this is going to lead to?
It is a journey, and it's a journey where I'm not certain what the final destination is. I know surely where I want to go with it, where I think people want us to go with it, is to continue to make it interactive, welcome to everyone. It says African-American, but it's open for everyone. We are not, by no means are we going to discriminate anyone. We want to continue to educate, to inform, to excite, to motivate. We want to bring out new products. We want the current products in the marketplace that are have a national footprint to share that with us, whomever the manufacturer may be. We want to encourage entrepreneurs to become a part of this. This $84 billion, certainly we feel can grow significantly. We want to be a part of that. We'd like to convert everybody on the planet to become golfers. It's just that simple.
And that's the point, isn't it?
Yes, it is.
This is inclusivity for everyone, for the benefit of this great game and huge industry.
Absolutely. And how great would it be if we had even half of the people on the planet playing golf? How great would that be?
Jim Beattie, it's been a pleasure speaking to you. Thank you very much for speaking to Syngenta Growing Golf.
Listen, I want to thank you, Syngenta, and I want to thank the golf industry for letting me do what I'm trying to do in this industry. It's my pleasure. Anytime anyone needs some help, I hope they would call me. Let me be a part of it. I'm pleased to do it.
Thanks to Jim. He's doing an outstanding job helping young businesses get a foothold in the golf industry. And his drive and determination to see more African Americans take up golf is inspired. As always, we're interested in your thoughts, so please do join the conversation on Twitter and LinkedIn. You'll find more industry insights and stories at syngentagolf.com. Thanks for listening.